Hi, I'm Chloe Biru. Welcome to the Chats by Chloe. For more than 10 years, the Chloe platform brings inspiring stories about people and travel on different channels, newsletters, the Chloe magazine, and this podcast. Access our Instagram at ByChloe and subscribe for free. Ah, and follow me on my Instagram account at Chloe Ribeiro. When I used to attend to Paris Fashion Week, she always captured my attention. When you're in events like that, you know that you have to deal with ego, with snobby people, but she was different. I could see in her smile or in the way she would behave at the fashion shows that she was different. My guest was in charge of Vogue Mexico for years, and her terrific work put her on the list of BOF 500. Today, I will chat with Kelly Talamas. What I think it's very interesting regarding this time that we're pausing and we're thinking about how we deal with our day and how we take care of ourselves. I was looking actually a post on your Instagram
when I saw this interview. I think in 2017 with Gisele Bündchen, and you were asking her about her morning routine. And I would like to know about your morning routine now. What do you do to start your day?
So my morning routine has changed drastically. Because I used to be the type of person that would wake up late and skip breakfast and would run to get Starbucks, get a coffee, and run to the office.
Yeah.
After a few years of doing that, I realized that's terrible for you mentally, physically, and I mean, just in all aspects. But now that I have, I mean, I'm now the mother of a 16-month-old. So my life has changed, obviously, drastically as well. And because of that, I am more similar now to Giselle. Mm-hmm. I wake up early in the morning. And that's why that always stuck with me, because I think it is very important. I've learned that it's very important. It's terrible to wake up with that chaos. Yeah. You know, I'm running late. I need to, you know, start catering to everybody else but yourself. So I do wake up early. It depends on the day, but 3 to 4 times out of the week, I wake up early. I have a water and a cup of coffee, and I do my workout, my exercise.
At home?
At home.
Oh, nice.
I have a trainer. I have a trainer who comes here. Which is great. It definitely makes it much easier. I do my workout and then I meditate and then I make myself breakfast. And normally around that time, my daughter starts to wake up. So I go get her and then the whole routine starts of the day. But definitely I've been trying to wake up over the past couple of months at least an hour earlier, ideally an hour and a half earlier than everybody else in my household so that I can at least feel like I did something productive for myself during the day.
And when did you start meditating?
It's something that I've struggled with on and off, to be honest. I still struggle with it, but it's something I would say same over the past maybe 6 months.
Oh, wow.
I'm still really working at it. I have to be honest.
I can't. I just can't.
I almost feel like sometimes I do it just to, you know, like to say I did it, you know, and sometimes I get something out of it. Sometimes I don't, but I hope next time you and I talk, I hope to say that I'm much better. I'm a pro at it.
But for how long you do it for 10 minutes or you do it 30 minutes?
Just 10 minutes. 10 minutes. Yeah. Just 10 minutes. Yeah. For now, that's all I can handle, to be honest.
And how do you organize your day? We're now during this crazy time with coronavirus, but how do you organize your day? Like, do you plan everything a week ahead, or do you start your day, you're working from home? How do you adjust your week?
So I definitely have like times when I have meetings or things that I need to be outside, you know, leave the house for. I work from home. Mm-hmm. So when I have meetings with clients or events, I normally try to schedule it in, you know, certain time frames that work for me. The traffic, I live in Bogota, Colombia, so the traffic here is crazy, honestly. So I normally try to do it where, you know, if it's either in the morning and I get that out of the way in the morning, so in the afternoon I can spend time at home and work, or vice versa, or I get my work done at home in the morning and then in the afternoon, because once I leave the house,
you get
you can lose your whole day, honestly. Yeah, exactly. You lose your whole day.
Clients are like open to have online meetings even after what you're,
you know,
what do you think?
I think, you know what I mean? I think it's been amazing, to be honest. I think it's something that we've realized that a lot of meetings we can do online and you feel just as connected and just as close, to be honest. I think that definitely is going to be something I used to do a lot more. Latins, as you know, I think love that like face-to-face, yeah. You know?
It's important they love, you know, to meet like once, and but then you can
exactly
keep going online.
Exactly. You know, if, exactly. If, absolutely. You know, I have clients that I work with over several months or over a year. And, you know, we normally get together each week while the other stuff is done on mail. I think sometimes, like you say, like not each meeting needs to be. I'm realizing that now. And it's been amazing that, you know, Zoom, Google, Hangout, there's all these different ways that we can. And I think if anything, that's been one positive thing of coronavirus is that we've almost become a bit more efficient in that sense.
I totally agree. And talking about transitions. How was the process and when was the process when you left Vogue and like tell me everything, how did it work, what happened?
That's a good question. You know, nobody's ever asked me exactly like that. It was a slow transition, I would say. Luckily it wasn't like an abrupt thing. So I was editor-in-chief I worked at Vogue for 10 years. I was editor-in-chief for almost, I think it was 6 years now. Mm-hmm. And I was doing long distance with my husband who lived in Colombia. So I always knew that, you know, at some point I eventually had to move to Colombia. We were engaged for about a year, which gave me time, which I, out of my choosing, to be engaged for a year so that it could give me time to kind of organize things with the company. Obviously, my job was so important to me and I was so, you know, loyal to Condé Nast. So it was something that we were able to negotiate. And luckily, I was very lucky that we had an office in Colombia. So for me, it was very important, to be able to, you know, to continue with the magazine, you know, moving to Colombia, obviously, you know, and I didn't want, you know, the traditional, you know, leave your job to get married type thing, you know. So for me, it was very important to be able to move to Colombia and hopefully stay with the magazine. But also, I mean, for me personally, to have something, you know, to do here and, you know, have a job. And honestly, there was a lot to be done here. It was a market. Colombia is a market where Vogue is very strong. And so luckily, I had about a year to prepare to leave my post as editor-in-chief. Mm-hmm. And then after that, so I moved to Colombia and I was creative director. So I oversaw kind of like the editorials and kind of like a bit of advertising for the region, for Latin America, because Mexico was seen by the Mexico office.
Yeah.
And I was in that position for a year, honestly. And it was amazing because I was also able to really work in depth in the region. Like before with my position, I would, you know, go to Peru for one day for an event and then go to Argentina for one day and fly back. And it was very fast paced. I never really had the time to like spend time in each region. So I did that for a year. And then after that, after a while, I was, you know, finally ready to go off on my own. You know, it's very different being in the head office and then being in a satellite office. So I finally made the decision to go off on my own and work on my own after, you know, positioning myself here and being, you know, a bit more acquainted with the region. So luckily it was a slow transition. It wasn't, you know, just like a fast, but I have to say it did take some time after you work 10 years in a company in the corporate world.
Family.
Yeah, exactly. So it did, I have to say it took a few years, to be honest, to kind of like really just get used to working on my own and having my own business and not having like this huge infrastructure behind me. So that was obviously important personal growth for me as well.
And it's interesting because from a lot of editors that are not specifically working on magazines anymore, I heard a lot about the transition of the content from print media to digital media. And in your case, it was not the case. That's why it's interesting to get to know stories. But now you can tell me more about it, but it's more about building brands and creating, doing like creative, I would say, perspectives or concepts for brands, right? That's what you're doing. And then Absolutely. You're bringing your background working with magazines, and you know exactly what brands need as an editor.
Absolutely. Yeah. It was amazing because while I was at the magazine, you kind of already saw that change happening. And we had a very small team. So we almost became kind of that for our clients. You know, a client would come to us and say, I have this new launch and I want to communicate it. And we would basically come up with this whole, you know, creative concept and strategy for them that we would do in alliance. And that's basically now what I'm doing with a lot of my clients and what I think a lot of editors have started doing as well, is really we become expert storytellers. You know, brands used to come to us and, you know, we would help them tell their story creatively in the magazine or online. And now we've become, expert storytellers and being able to, you know, sit down with brands. And because you have so many talented designers out there that are really great at creating clothes, but sometimes they, you know,
it's
oftentimes
not their business.
They struggle.
Their business is to create something, not like the marketing sales side of it.
Exactly. Like they can't really tell you. I mean, they can tell you the fabric that was used and et cetera, but they can't really tell you, you know, the inspiration behind and how. So what I do, and I think a lot of editors nowadays are doing also, is helping them to create these stories, how to speak to their audiences, how to communicate it in a way that's not just like trying to sell you, here's my dress or here's my collection, buy it. You know, it's kind of trying to sell you a belief, sell you a story.
But even when you talk about selling stories, when we talk about an email pitch from a PR, what do you think that, what disturbed you in the past about, like, I'm receiving this email, they're just, because for us, for example, I will receive a copy and paste email with the press release and nothing special. And this is exactly what you're bringing to your clients now, right? Like
Absolutely.
How to tell the story, but for different vehicles, different magazines.
Absolutely. So I think, like you say, sometimes you receive, you know, just like a very generic press release that doesn't really, you know, doesn't really say much. Or, you know, I think sometimes kind of just pushing like, oh, you know, can you help me? I think also I always was frustrated with the, oh, do you think you can get this in the magazine? You think you can, you know what I mean? Without really giving you some sort of like background or just like, oh, you know, we have this launch. What do you think? What can we do together? You know, I think it's always very important to have information, you know, obviously, even if it's not there. I think it's very important to be personable. Like you say, this copy paste is terrible. I think it's personable. I always think, and I always tell my clients, it's important to know your audience. You know, not all magazines are the same. Really study, whether it's a magazine, a website, a blog, really study what it is that they do, what they tend to publish, what they don't tend to publish. Because I think it even happens, to be honest, I'm sure with you as an editor or now, you know, as a consultant and designers, you know, they send you stuff and they want you to post it on your Instagram. I think we all curate, I mean, whether it's an Instagram page or a full-on magazine, you know, there's a certain curation, there's a certain voice behind that. And it's not just one size fits all. So I think that personalization is so important. And there's something to be said for, you know, really paying attention to the details and speaking to that person, you know, like knowing, like you just told me, you know, on my Instagram, you saw a post. I think that's so nice. It makes you feel like, oh, they actually read my magazine, or they actually, you know, look at my Instagram and pay attention. I think that is so, it makes, at least in my experience, it sometimes makes all the difference and can sometimes make you fall in love with the brand if you realize, like, you know, that attention to detail.
And what do you think that, like, has changed regarding the role of PRs between this communication?
So I think it's changed a lot, because in the sense before, I mean, first of all, at least when I was the 10 years I was at the magazine, it changed from the first year to the last year, because I mean, there's no such thing as free press anymore, sadly. It's all about advertisers. It's all about, you know, so I know friends of mine who work in PR, and they will not take clients if they're not advertising in media, because it, especially here, obviously it changes by market, but here it's impossible. It's impossible to get coverage if you are not a paying advertiser. So I think that's one big thing. This whole idea of just pitching stories has changed so much, because it comes with this whole negotiation behind it. Yeah.
Tell me.
No, go ahead.
No, I would like to know your opinion, because for example, as a magazine, you can receive suggestions for content. and we study if we like it or not, if it's a good story, if it would be interesting for our readers. But then if you're talking about an influencer, they would not receive things and think about their audience and post it or not. It's all about, are you paying me for that or not? I believe, right? They because we always publish content because it's just content.
Yeah.
For sure. Now, different magazines are like, if you're not advertising, I would not publish the story. There are magazines and magazines, and I know that the market is struggling.
Absolutely.
But the difference is that I see that, to me, the role of PRs are changing because you have only a few magazines out there right now, and then they cannot sell stories to influencers because it's all about what can I pay you to post now on your Instagram.
Yeah.
But what do you think, like, what's going on?
Yeah, I think it's, and like you said, just like there's magazines and there's magazines, I think there's also influencers and they're influencers.
Yeah.
And that, like you say, the majority, I think it's like, yeah, you pay me and they make a lot of money for it. I also think there are, and I think this is also an overused word as well, but tastemakers,
mm-hmm.
who really, you know, if there's brands that they find and truly love,
yeah,
you know, they will post it because also, you know, you follow them. And they kind of pride themselves on being discoverers, you know, of new, whether it be a designer or it be, an interior decorator or, you know, just finding new things.
Yeah, yeah.
And I love to follow those type of people on Instagram, you know, that really, like, you can tell that it's just that they found something that they love and they post it. Mm-hmm. And then obviously they have their clients. But, and so I think there is those influences, but those, again, like you say, it's not because press pitched it to them. It's more because they found it. They actually do the investigation and they find these designers or these brands that they love and then they share it with their audience. I think the role of PR is, it's almost irrelevant. I guess there's more like communication managers and stuff like that. And I think a lot of brands now are bringing on editors and not really calling them, you know, PRs, although they are weaving those stories and creating those stories that then they share, you know, or they're creating these Instagram strategies, you know, and they're, you know, so they're not necessarily PRs, but they're kind of doing the same thing that, you know, PRs used to do, whereas create a strategy with five women who, you know, love the brand, and then they do an Instagram strategy where they all post on the internet. I think that's kind of the future, and those people are kind of replacing PRs, or the PRs are becoming, you know, this type of transitioning into this type of role.
Got it. I heard a lot about also, like, for this different trends for the fashion world. BOF was asking their followers this week if people would like to see fashion weeks only online. What's your opinion about
it? Yeah, I heard that. You know, I think... I think time will tell. It's hard to say. The way I would envision it, and, you know, like us, that we've been to a fashion week, I do think maybe it's not that they'll necessarily disappear, but I think they might definitely reduce and go back to what fashion weeks used to be. And I'm talking way back when, mm-hmm. when it was really a select group of editors, a select group of buyers and clients, and that's it.
Yeah.
You know, the rest of the people can stream it online.
Yeah.
But I definitely think that they'll probably scale back, downsize, maybe not do these grand productions, really make it about the clothes and selling the clothes and just keeping it very select. And I think that makes more sense, to be honest. You know, the people that have to be there will be there. You won't have, I have nothing against, like, you know, influencers and bloggers, but a lot of them, you know, they just go to just sit there and take pictures and show. They don't actually have, and not all bloggers, but a lot of them, the majority of them, you know, they don't actually have like a set purpose to be there because they need to, you know, report or they're doing the buy or, you know, and I think we need to go back to that. And then there'll be other ways that people can work with influencers. You know, I no longer think that they need to be at the fashion weeks to, you know, work with brands.
Yeah, even if you maybe you have the show online and you have the famous receipts for every mm-hmm. city in the world with the one pilot, and then editors can really touch it and see details for that piece. But yeah, it's just so different right now. I don't even go.
Exactly. And I was listening to a webinar a couple of weeks ago also, and they weren't necessarily talking about this. It was more about like retail, and it was an interesting concept. And he broke down like brands that have been successful, and a lot of them, it's not that they're, you know, they're global brands, but they've been able to really localize, like, you know, really like speak locally.
Yeah.
So I think exactly like you said, it'll be interesting to see, and which I think would be very intelligent of brands to do, is really to have their shows, you know, where they, you know, they can do a show and they can stream it online, but then do really local concepts that even, you know, with clothes, that's even, it doesn't even have to be the whole collection. Maybe pieces that are really relevant to that market, and not, you know, you don't need like the fur coats in Mexico, for example. You know, you can have clothes that like speaks to each market. So I think that that's the future. That's really where I see the future, and it makes perfect sense. And I also think,
yeah,
it's also more cost effective for everybody.
And what about the work you're doing now with brands, for brands? You said that you're creating stories. What? How is the process? Did you connect with the clients you have today from the time that you're an editor? To open a new business, it's a challenge. How did you start everything?
So luckily, yeah, most of them have been, you know, people I've known in the past that I've worked with in the past that sought me out once I was independent.
Yeah.
For help with story, you know, each brand, I've worked separately with each brand. It depends on the needs of each brand. Some have been more consolidated and established than others. So maybe I've come in to help them with particular projects, and then, you know, that's it. Other brands have, you know, very small emerging brands that I've kind of helped them just get the, you know, the ball rolling and get kind of like their feet off the ground. And then I've done a few collaborations with international brands who are looking to do things locally, who are kind of, you know, a bit lost or entering the market or looking for that like one-on-one personal connection. So really with each one, it's different. It really depends on the client. Right now, for example, I'm working with, you know, a local designer. I've been working with a local brand, Leal Dacaret. So with them, they're kind of, you know, they started a few years like to internationalize. Mm-hmm. So kind of helping them a bit with, you know, with their social media, with how we were talking, like how to pitch, you know, press and media, and just interesting strategies that they can do to just get their name just a bit more out there.
And how do you make a brand cool today? How do you make a brand just to be different?
I think it's a fine line, but I think there's something to be said really for authenticity. You know, I think, first of all, before I even start, when I work with a brand, especially if there is, you know, if it's a more established brand that's well known, then they don't need that. But if it's a smaller brand, I always work with them really like behind the scenes before even starting trying to contact anybody, mm-hmm, or doing any type of event, because I guess, so first of all, before that, I say, I'm very picky. I don't take on any client, to be honest. And I don't mean it in a snobby way at all. It's more like, if I don't feel it resonates with me, okay, if I don't feel that I can communicate them, or I don't feel like it goes with my aesthetic or my values, I don't take it on, because then I find it very difficult to, you know, to really, yeah. And I also don't want to lose, if people see me like, oh, Kelly, you know, always brings this type of project, then I wouldn't want to like, you know, change that whole and confuse people. So that's number one. But second of all, I always work with them behind the scenes to really make sure that on all fronts, you know, design wise, communication wise, we really have everything down pat, everything's cohesive, everything makes sense before I start doing, you know, any type of activity publicly. But I think there's different ways, and it really depends on the brand. I think it's really important, and what I do work with them is really like, what's your DNA? What are your strengths? What are you, you know, like, what can we do to show these strengths, you know? So if it's a lifestyle brand, I've done, you know, kind of like a lifestyle experience, mm-hmm, with some clients where, you know, you invite a few editors and influencers to come to Colombia, you know. So if it's a brand that really has that 360 lifestyle, I think there's nothing better than really inviting people to like live that with you, you know, to really, if the designer has a great personality, sometimes I think it's great for people to actually meet them, to really like understand, you know, the brand and who they are and what they do. And then I think it's also identifying I think there's something that's really important, and it's kind of what we were talking about earlier, is identifying like who is an interesting audience. You know, I'm working with a brand that's super bright and colorful. I'm not going to pitch an influencer who is all black and white on their Instagram. Yeah. So I think it's also about knowing, and I think it doesn't have to be. A lot of brands make that mistake where they want to get on the influencer that has a million followers. You know, I think sometimes there's something to be said for, you know, really niche, cool girls in different markets that, you know, maybe don't have a huge following, but they have a significant and important following. And really just getting that word of mouth. I think word of mouth, people underestimate, you know, they want that post, you know, that one post, but sometimes it's more the word of mouth. And you know, how many times have you gone to lunch with your friends, and if your friend is wearing something cool,
yeah,
that's how you discover the brand. So I think, you know, several things, but it comes with a lot of like studying and investigation and really like understanding, first of all, who the brand is, what they should be communicating, and then understanding who are interesting people that we can reach out to get to know.
And what do you think are the trends for brands to establish themselves now? Because anybody can open a brand on Instagram, right? But how do you think that, like, what do you think that brands should do in order to stay there?
I think, again, I feel it's a mixture of things. In the past, and that'll be interesting to see going forward, in the past, I think a lot of brands went to Paris, and that was all. And you have to say, it is, I mean, you know, it's such an important networking, you know, moment for brands to go season after season. And sometimes, yeah, you know, the best relationships form over a glass of wine at dinner after a show, you know, with a group of friends. So it'll be interesting. I think networking and staying in touch with people across the globe and important people who have always supported your brand is really, really important. Even now, you know, I spoke with a few designers, and a lot of them are, you know, randomly just reaching out to say hi to people, you know, in different countries. And I think that's important. And we'll see if Fashion Week keeps up or how. But I think there will have to be a moment where people can come together and really connect. I think obviously social media for now is still super relevant. I think it's still important. Sometimes it's annoying and frustrating for many people, but I still think it's an important platform,
mm-hmm,
to communicate and stay relevant. And it's how, you know, I think we all discover a lot of designers. And I think also it's important to kind of build your own community outside of Instagram, you know, whether that be on social media, whether that be on, you know, a website, yeah, or through a newsletter or a podcast, or, you know, kind of build your own community so that people can continue to come after you for, whether it be, you know, for fashion, but also for inspiration.
And what was the difference you noticed when you started working for the Latin America market, and like the difference you've seen between Mexico and the Latin America market through Vogue? Because for me, for example, working in Brazil as an editor, we had events every single day. Brands were producing small cocktails every month to have editors together and customers together. But here in New York is very different. It's colder. Like you have events. You have many events because there are many brands here, but you don't have brands doing something all the time. It's interesting because at the same time that the city is very busy, I believe brands are more, in a way, laid back from what I experienced in Brazil.
Absolutely. I mean, definitely Mexico was like Brazil. Mexico was an event every single day, all the time, events, cocktails, dinners, brunches. it was a lot. It was a lot. I think now,
but there's a difference between one market and the other.
There is. Now living in Colombia, you have much less events, to be honest. I think it also comes with, I guess it depends on the country, because here, I guess Brazil is more similar to Mexico. It's a huge market and you have a lot of international brands.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously international brands have big budgets and, you know, they have constant launches and things that they need to communicate. So I think that's part of it. Here in Colombia, you have much less international brands. So while there are events, it's not as much. You have kind of like pockets of events. You know, it's not all year long. You have, you know, times when, you know, the year starts off slow, then kind of like in March, it starts to pick up. And then, you know, fall, you have events. Summertime is dead because people are traveling. So it's, you have events, but it's not as much as you did. And then, yeah, I think across in Latin America, it really depends on that. And most tend to be markets with a lot of international brands.
Interesting.
But I think, you know, if Colombia had a lot of international brands, you probably would have more events, I think, to be honest. It's a Latin thing.
Yeah, it is. What are the designers now that are really making you pay attention to them now?
So I think Colombia has, it's still kind of like a leader in that sense. Mm-hmm. In Latin America, there's a lot of brands coming out of Colombia. You also have a few coming out of Peru, Chile, I'm seeing a bit. I think really throughout all of Latin America, I've recently met even from countries you often don't hear of, you know, like Uruguay has some interesting designers now, mm-hmm. Bolivia, smaller markets. But I guess in terms of quantity, I would still say that Colombia and Mexico have a lot of designers.
But where are the designers, which designers in Colombia you think that now they're exploding?
So, I mean, you have obviously the big ones like Silvia and Joan Ortiz, who are well known. You have Lealda Caret, who's been around here for a while, and they recently started going out. You have, let's see, I mean, you have designers like Francesca Miranda, mm-hmm. Verde Limon.
I heard about Verde
Limon. Yeah. Verde Limon, geez, now I'm drawing a blank with all the designers. but no, you have a lot. You have Amelia Toro, you have Carlo Carrizosa, mm-hmm. you have Bayetier, and they're all like, some are accessories, some are handbags. Agua Bendita, they've been around, they've done swimsuits for a while, but they launched their luxury line, and they do beautiful dresses that I've seen. Amazing, because I see the randomest people on Instagram that buy their pieces. Yeah, and you have a lot more, honestly. So many that are coming out of Colombia that it's exciting. And Pepa Pombo, a lot of them, honestly, have been around in Colombia for a while, but you're hearing them a lot more. They decided in the last couple of years to, you know, step outside, start the wholesale business. Hunting Season is another one, made in Colombia. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the list is endless, honestly.
And what would be your advice for the brands you're working with now to how to deal with the post coronavirus season?
I think it'll be interesting moving forward. I would tell them, first of all, to, you know, stay calm and be patient, mm-hmm. because it could be a while. You know, right now we don't know how long this is going to last. We don't know, you know, what season it'll be once, yeah. you know, we start to get out. And even then, I think people's budgets will be very reduced. I would tell them to stay focused on, you know, maybe right now, stay focused on the essentials of their brand, you know, really creating the essentials. Like I was talking to one of my clients the other day, and you know, people might not be buying gowns now or buying, you know, dresses, but they will want to buy pieces, first of all, that they can use often. You know, you're investing in a piece that you'll be able to use often, mm-hmm. or something that makes them feel good, you know, and really going back, I think communication will be key. I think if you're a brand that employs 20 artisans, you need to communicate that so that when people do want to buy, they understand that they're helping to employ these families, because I think that's so important. You know, like, you don't want to feel like you're just buying a piece of clothes anymore. You want to feel like you're actually helping, you know, if you're going to be spending this hard-earned money that, you know, you no longer have as much buying power with. So you want to make sure that it's going somewhere, first of all, it's going to be useful to you, but also it's going somewhere that, you know, it's going to benefit other people. And I think definitely just finding a way to connect one-on-one and really be open and honest with your audience. You know, like, I think now more than ever is the time to really connect. First of all, define who is your audience and connect with them on a personal level. You know, tell them a bit more about who you are as a designer, who you are as a brand. Because even if they're not buying now, you know, they'll remember that and they'll keep you in mind for the future.
Great. Thank you. Like, I will make notes about it, because I have a lot of friends in the industry that they're panicking.
Same.
It's just crazy, but we'll get there.
It is. I know. I know. I think it's scary, but I think
it's a known. It's a known.
Exactly. I think that's what gives. That's what I say with everybody. I think it gives you anxiety in that sense because you don't know. But I think, you know, it's going to make us, it's all making us like think and really get creative. You know, I'm sure with you, with things I've never been, you know, I don't like cooking, but I've been creative with like things that I would never normally do because we actually have the time. So how amazing all these creative designers, you know, they're like 10 times more creative than the average person.
Exactly. I'm loving to have time now to watch some masterclass I always wanted to watch. And now I'm watching.
Exactly.
It's amazing. Cooking.
It is. Yeah. So I think we're going to see some interesting things coming out of this. At least once it all passes, I'm sure all these designers who are super creative are going to have some really interesting things up their sleeve. So I'm excited to see that.
Great. Teddy, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so happy to finally speak with you.
Yeah. Now I wait for you here for dinner. Coffee, something in New York.
Yes, for sure. The minute I can travel, I definitely will let you know so we can finally get together for dinner.
Okay. Wow. Thank you so much.
Thank you. People. Bye. Stay
Bye.
Safe.
Ciao.
Bye.
I'm Paulo Ribeiro, and you just listened to the Chats by Clo. If you like this episode, please subscribe to our channel and receive the new ones right away. Oh, and please rate and review. Thank you, and I'll see you soon.